telling Bob?
You recognize that sound? That's the sound of an airplane. And of course, I'm sitting at, is it the Billy Bishop Airport? Or just outside, actually, across the canal from it. Airport here in Toronto, city center. Porter Airlines. I decided to let this one ferry go by and just sit for a spell in the sunshine. I got plenty of time. Given my character, I am always early for events. I cannot stand the anxiety of being late. Been that way all my life. Have no intention of changing, and it drives me nuts being with people who, you know, no hurry. We'll get there and don't seem to have any understanding of time. Like my son. I'm one extreme, he might be the other, and probably right in the middle is a happy medium, but far better to be early and then have a chance to relax, you know, which is what I'm doing. So, welcome to Dixon James, the podcast, brought to you by the that's a hard one. I tried to teach my students that today, simply because Anthony Marco referred to me in that way, and himself. The inimitable Scarborough Dude. Dixon James Podcast, probably, I don't know, 430, I can't keep track. Doesn't really matter, it is what it is. You'll find it if you're subscribed, and boy, I sure hope you are. It's cold, and it's sunny. It's kind of nice. A great day for traveling. Earlier in the week, we had like sort of windstorms and snow, part of the storm system that swept across the USA and headed to the Maritimes. And as it often happens, it bypassed Toronto. We really do have such an easier winter here than in much of the rest of Canada. Anyway, this is the beginning, the start of a journey. The last time I'm sitting on a bench, and the very last time I was on, the only other time in my entire life when I was sitting on this very bench, was when Dr. Dave Broadbeck was beside me. And it seems very fitting, because that was also my first time coming to Porter Airlines to meet him, pick him up, bring him back to my house on the way to the event that Anthony Marco organized in Hamilton. Dave came and stayed with us, and now, tit for tat, in return, I am flying up to Sault Ste. Marie to meet Dave, Isabel, and at least Jonathan. I don't know if Maddie still lives at home or not, but anyway, to visit the family. I'm very, very excited about that, and I'll be seeing them shortly. Just have to cross over, get on that ferry, cross over, get on that plane at 3:40, and they said they'd be at the airport to pick me up. And it goes from there. Just a wonderful thing to do. It's part of my retirement plan of visiting podcasters on their home turf. So, of course, I don't know where I'd ever track down Nora Augustinus, you know. Who knows where he is, for real. But we know that Dave Delaney's in Tennessee, and that's got to be on the list. Bob Goyette out somewhere outside of Montreal. Although, I don't know if he'll have me at his house. He may suggest meeting downtown. We'll see. Depends how I behave. The ferry is over there. You just follow this path. As if I'm the expert. No, look, the ferry comes here. No, not where I'm sitting. Anyway, that's the ferry over there. I'm looking at it right now. It's just all exciting. I don't want to gas up too much here and fill this with inconsequentials. I do have a few themes that I'd like to get into, and part of it is just changing Canada, because I'm constantly reminded of this as I'm teaching, and God, how I've loved teaching. Next week is my last week, and who knows if I'm going to be hired back in January, the fall. They don't tell us. I don't know. It's contract to contract. I sure as hell hope so. But I will say that this semester I've had has been the easiest and by far I can't say by far the most enjoyable, because I really do enjoy all of them as you get to know the characters in your class. But today I only had 6 students, 6 out of 12. 2 have dropped out for sure. 1 only comes if it's a test. And others are just as apt not to come for one reason or another. But the 6 who came were all keeners. And what was wonderful, they were all from different countries, different backgrounds, different life stories, different religions. And it's so enjoyable when you're meeting individuals. They're not representative of the culture, because they are individuals who may belong to a different culture, but now here they are in Canada, with their own completely different story. And it's a Friday, it's only a 2-hour class, and I was trying to make it a little lighter, a little more fun, and I said, let's do poetry today. And I gave them 2 of my favorite poems, one called Warning, When I Grow Old, I Shall Wear Purple. And it's a wonderful, wonderful poem. I'm going to give a copy of that to Isabel. I think she'll like it. And the flip side of that, I had One Almost Might. And it's a poem I may have even recited on the Dixon James podcast years ago, about just a sort of stopping, trying to freeze time for a moment and just examine this cross-section of eternity. Just look into the palm of your hand, or survey a square inch of ground, and just stop and try and untangle beginnings from endings. And they really got it, and it was so much fun to go line by line, to get the different students to read out and analyze each line and get the different meanings, and then try an overall interpretation of the poem. It was pure teaching, but pure learning and pure sharing. It was just, honestly, and I'm not taking the credit for it. It was just real, I don't know, the way education should be sometimes. You know, you're not just drilling in hard facts, which, yeah, admittedly you have to do sometimes, but really, let's pick a poem apart. And how does it relate to you? And it was so wonderful when the student from China said, I get this poem because it relates to my culture. She understood that. She said, it's Eastern. And she was right. And I said, that's so beautiful, because it's a Westerner trying to explain Eastern thinking to Westerners. And the other one was about a woman who just said all the bad things she was going to do. Eat 5 pounds of sausages at a go, and learn to spit and wear purple with a red hat that doesn't go. And just this complete spirit of rebellion as an old woman, and why. And they guessed it, because she's an unhappy middle-aged, middle-class housewife who's just kept such a tight rein on herself that inside she's boiling over and she just wants to let go. And they could all relate to that, the pressures of conformity, the need to fit in, to do what others expect of you. And the girl from Ethiopia said, wow, in my culture that is such a powerful force. It was just, honestly, you walk out, you're just sailing, you're off the ground, you feel, wow, that was time well spent, you know. And I began the class by putting up sort of a Grinch-like picture. It was pretty evil-looking, of saying, now's the time to give all your money to the banks and corporations, buying things you don't need with money you don't have. And, of course, it was perfect because it's Black Friday, and the pressure's on wherever you go. Fuck, you can't escape it. Bye, bye, bye. Oh, so we talked about that, and they got all excited, and they got that concept for sure. And then another one about just sometimes you don't necessarily end up where you thought you'd be, but you're always where you're meant to be, or where you plan to be. You always end up where you're meant to be, and everybody got that and agreed. And just, man, sometimes teaching is really, really fun. Sometimes it's pure pleasure, and it's like I am meant to be doing this. Excuse me. So there's my start. I don't know, I'm probably going to have enough for 2 podcasts by the time I've left the Sioux. But hopefully there'll be a recording with Dave and Isabel. They do Broca's Area. Might get in on that. And just see how things pan out. All I know is when I get there, I'm going to want to have a drink and a big hug. And well, I won't hug Dave. Won't even shake his hand. Might slap him. Anyway, I'm going to go. I see the ferry's back in. I think I'm going to head on over to the island and just hang out around the airport until it's time for my first flight ever on Porter Airlines and first flight into the Sault Ste. Marie Airport, which Anthony Marco tells me doubles as a car wash. It's the town car wash as well. Okay. So, folks, listeners, thanks for your patience, and back at you real soon. Stay tuned. Sault Ste. Marie. In the morning after, and surprisingly, my head is not too bad. I can't imagine how Dave is feeling, but he's not showing anything. He's appearing perfectly normal. In fact, he's frying sausages at this very moment. I'm sitting in the upstairs living room. It's a Saturday, yeah. Saturday morning. And we had quite a time last night. Dave got out the old Zoom H2, and we recorded 3 podcasts of about an hour each, quite surprisingly. They kind of went downhill. It was all in honor of the Canadian National Day of Podcasting, and it just kind of took off from there. It was actually a broken area with Isabel and Dave, and I joined in a little too rudely at times. There is one I'm a little bit embarrassed that involved a lot of music. I think it was the musical edition, which was the 3rd one. So I've been trying to convince Dave to hold off releasing that one. But it was a bit crazy. We had asked poor Isabel to bring out her ukulele and sing nicely. And somebody, that would be me, started caterwauling Johnny Cash songs. But damn, it was a lot of fun. The liquor flowed, although to my credit, thank you. I just stuck to my beer, and that's why I don't feel too bad today. It was, you know, bound to happen, all the excitement of the travel and being in the Sioux for the first time. Got myself a black coffee, which is all I need to get any day started. And actually looking forward to it. We're very excited. There's a whole new day to go, and then even if it is Sunday before I leave back for Toronto. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that Porter flight. We were both agreed, man, if ever there was a sponsor or somebody wanted to show respect for, or just to, you know, talk about how much you appreciated their excellent service, it is Porter Airlines, really. That was my first time. My flight, my wife and my son have flown, but the lounge is great. You just help yourself to coffee and nuts and water, whatever you want. And get on the flight. It's only an hour flight, but bam, it's on the house. Nice steam whistle beer and a bag of the best vegetable chips I think I've ever had. And just what blew me away was stepping off the plane. You're stepping onto the tarmac. I'm just not used to small airports. You know, usually it's big and you're going down these corridors and everything. If you've ever checked into Pearson, you know what I'm talking about. And here you step off this little Bombardier Q400, which is a beautiful plane, very smooth. And you're on the runway. You walk over. I think the last time happened to me was in Kano, Nigeria. You walk in, and of course there they are, and there's your bag, and off you go. Isabel was waiting in the moving vehicle, so it was one of the easiest bits of travel I've ever done. And let me bore you with the details. My son dropped me off at the Eglinton Go station. This is the son who now has his driver's license. Was able to drop me off at Eglinton Go, train right downtown. I got on the front of the train, so you exit on the southwest end. You walk over, just cross the street, over to the Starbucks. You grab yourself a coffee, and the Porter Shuttle comes along, and you get on the Porter Shuttle with your coffee, and it takes you to the ferry. And that's where you last heard from me, and you hop on the ferry. You're on the plane, and there you are. So it was a wonderful little weekend jaunt. I'm so glad I did this. I congratulated myself on the show last night just for having the foresight to say, hey, you know, that would be fun. That would be a good idea. Go visit Dave and Isabel and family. And that's what I did, and that's where I am, and that's an up-to-date thing. If you want to listen to actually what really happened, then listen to those three episodes of Broken Area, and you'll get some variation of what we talked about and what the events were. So I'm going to stop there. This is just a brief catch-up. I think I'm going to give you a few different clips from here and there, but I'm going to go back to enjoying my coffee and seeing how the rest of the day unfolds. We are going to go to a movie, and I think we all agreed that what was the name of the movie? What's the name of the movie, John, that we decided we'd like to see? Catch a Fire. And the one we were thinking, yeah. All right. It's something anyway. We'll see how that whole thing unfolds. There's Isabel. She's up and about, so I will sign off. Good morning, Isabel.
Good morning.
All right. Take care. Bye for now. Okay, I am sitting in the office. Let me go and read the door. It says SH, now that's Shinhawk Hall. Shinhawk Hall 506. Ooh, you're giving away your exact address here. It's Dr. David Broadbeck, Department of Psychology. I am actually in the lair of this gentleman. Well, bastards. It's a short sign. This is quite exciting. This is something I was coming to, as you know, I'm in Sault Ste. Marie, and one of the things I really wanted to do was visit Dave's prof. I guess because it's just not something I would normally do. I was always been on the student side. But also, knowing David, I knew it was going to be a neat office. It's absolutely chock full of books and beer bottles.
Yeah. So, not like they're on the floor. I mean, they're on display.
Yeah,
it's not
and
like,
they're empty.
There's not beer cans everywhere. It's not,
Posters. I'll post a picture. YouTube pictures, YouTube posters all over the place.
Yeah.
And sitting here on the sofa is Dr. Dave himself, seemingly very comfortable in this place.
Yeah. I mean, I work sitting here. I work sitting on my couch. I with a computer on my lap. I don't. These chairs that are in here. That's if we have a meeting. Our part meetings sometimes are in here just because it's big enough. And
now, are you head of the psychology department then?
Yeah.
How many other psychology profs are there?
Four.
Four, really?
Yeah, so that makes us a big department here in Elkhoba.
Well, yeah.
So,
your specialization, animal behavior, animal cognition?
Yeah. Yeah. Though I don't teach only stuff like that. At a small school, you have to go outside your comfort zone and learn other stuff. So I teach a lot of sort of neuroscience stuff, which I...
Sorry? A lot of what?
Neuroscience type stuff.
Okay.
And also...
Over on the biology side.
Yeah, it's stuff like much more, it's biological psychology, the way to put it. And I teach stuff on memory. They're related enough to my training that that's not too much of a stretch. So, you know, the stuff that's a stretch is doing the drugs course, the neuropharmacology course. I didn't teach that stuff to myself.
Okay. Now, you can get a Bachelor of Science here at Algoma University in psychology itself?
Mm-hmm. Bachelor of Science or Bachelor of Arts, yes.
Or Bachelor of Arts.
Yeah.
Okay, and you choose the stream, and the student chooses which...
Yeah, they choose the stream. The only real difference is they take more elective credits in biology, chemistry, and physics if they do science.
The science. And, of course, when I did my study in psychology, it was decidedly on the arts side.
Right.
So what do the other four profs teach? What sort of courses would they do? Personality?
There's social psychology. I wish I had my computer with me. I could tell you.
Well, that's all right. I don't need to know exactly. But just in general, I'm trying to get a range.
So it's the same stuff that you would see at a big school. So child development, personality, social, psychopathology, And then, you know, research methods and statistics.
The dreaded stats course.
Yeah, I love teaching stats. I teach the advanced statistics. And then there's, we have special topics courses every year and all kinds of things. Like, oh, we had one on autism intervention that someone taught. We had one on hearing, like hearing science and communication disorders.
So somebody special would come in to teach that? Or
yeah.
One of you? Oh, yeah.
Yep. Usually somebody from town that is interested in that kind of thing, we get them to do that.
Okay.
Sometimes people from across the river in Michigan.
It seems, I mean, it's a definitely a small university.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Sault Ste. Marie, but it seems that it could be a very pleasant environment here to, for a certain type of student. You know, it's
we try. I mean, you know, I know all my students' names.
Yeah.
You know, I'll teach people 5 and 6 times in their career. We all will.
Okay, that makes a difference.
They come to. We don't have any classes bigger than 65 people.
Is there a slogan for the university?
Because
I remember you mentioning it the other day.
Small university, big education. I think is what it is.
That's not bad.
No, it's better than our old one.
Yeah, okay.
Because you belong here, which you can take a lot of different ways. You
know? That's insulting.
I think so.
Could
it could be taken as an insult, or it could be taken as an order.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it much.
No.
But it's one of the things with the smallest school in Ontario, smallest university. By far.
Now, it was a college before this?
It was an affiliated college of Laurentian University.
Okay.
Up until 2008, we granted degrees from Laurentian.
Okay.
Then we got our independence, and now we grant our own degrees. We can make up our own programs, things like that. We used to have to teach.
That's a good thing for you and a good thing for the whole entire university, of course.
The reason we did it was to grow.
Yeah.
You can't really grow when someone else is your boss.
Yeah.
And we have grown, a lot. Probably since that year, since 2008, I bet we've got 50% more students. And we've got more buildings. We got all that stuff because we got to put the students somewhere.
Yep.
So
I saw the residences.
Yeah, we got residences. We've got 1, 2 here, and then there's 1 downtown as well. So, and then. There's also the bioscience building was built, which is that way, about 340 meters.
So, folks, this is a side of Dr. Dave you rarely hear. This is the serious, the actual Professor Brodbeck.
I'm not even that serious in class. Today.
No. And normally on, of course, if you listen to other shows, what are the other ones you do with Anthony Marco there? Best episode ever. And the Martin Mull Variety Hour.
Yes.
That's a different side. And of course, if you listen to the podcast, we recorded last night.
Yes.
This will be another dimension altogether, I think.
Indeed. We are drinking nearly as much.
No, not today. But anyway, I'm going to end it there. I just thought it'd be fun to have a little clip here. Any closing words? Any thoughts? Any insights?
I don't know. I think people should just get as much education as they can.
Well, I think that's a very serious and a very honest. And I think the one thing we do well in Canada is we promote lifelong education.
Yeah,
I've gone back 3-4 times since graduating from university in 72, and I've loved it every single time.
No, I think it's
true. You learn, and it's stimulating. It's good for the brain to start with.
Sure.
And it's good if you're a teacher to be humiliated to being forced to be a student again and write papers and work with people and so on. That's a good learning experience, is knowing what it's like, the dreaded test.
There's a great thing about the Canadian university system, and that's that there are no elite universities in Canada. It's for undergraduate education. You just aren't. You get the same education everywhere. That's also a real weakness of the Canadian education.
But is that really true?
Yes, it is.
Because overseas, they believe so much in the stats. Like every kid has to go University of Toronto or McGill. I'm willing to bet the education an undergraduate gets at the University of Toronto is crap because of, the size of the classes, professor.
It's different. I went to a big school. I went to Western, and then I went to U of T for graduate school.
Okay, but graduate school is a little different.
Graduate school is a different matter, but I mean, I know what the environment there is like.
Yeah.
And it's just different, but the material is the same. This stuff is really controlled by the government, so you get the same material everywhere.
Yeah, but I guess it's the learning experience and being
in
a smaller setting
that you
can actually
talk,
ask questions.
That's
I think that does make a big difference.
And U of T can sell it on, there are 5 Nobel Prize winners on our faculty.
Yeah, well...
There are any of those here, but there's not enough of us here to, you know.
Yet.
Yeah. Man, I don't think that'll ever happen.
All right. Okay, we'll close it on that note. I encourage all of you listening out there to educate yourselves, you assholes.
That's right.
Thank you. Bye for now.
This must be the place.
Microphone here, you can talk from there. What was it you said about painters?
Coming. Just a second.
I've just interrupted this wonderful flow of conversation Isabel and I were having about art. I'm admiring two pieces of art. Well, it's a piece, but two separate installations, boxes that are just absolutely so beautiful. Truly, truly an inspired work of art. But Isabel is questioning whether they were really inspired or not. But you were saying something about painting, and an artist feeling or don't feel.
Well,
does Dave allow you to eat when you're podcasting?
You were asking me if I feel that it comes from a deeper place, and for me, when I'm painting, is sometimes there are a few things that happen. Sometimes when I have an assignment, I will have an idea prior to my assignment, but then I will start painting and think, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm going where this painting is leading me to go, and this is where I will go. But then later I find that my original idea will pop out when I don't expect it, and I was like, oh, okay, I went back to this without even thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, so does it come from a deeper place? I don't know. But and then when I'm painting something else, sometimes when I'm in the process of it, I don't know really what I'm doing. I'm just kind of, okay, well, I think I need to add some red here. And then I do it, and I don't really think about what's going to happen. And then later I look at it and I think, okay, well, this doesn't work, or this works, or whatever. But it's always to have unity of a pictorial unity, you know, of mark, of color, of shape. To create something that is really dynamic for somebody to look at, like when you're looking at it,
and what about
do you want to feel energy? Do you want to feel calm? Do you want to feel, you know, there are emotions you can beckon with the kind of marks that you use.
It sounds like you're saying it's both, that there may be a flow, or things may just emerge almost on their own just as you're doing it, and at other times it's trial and error, or you'll try something and like that red color design, no, that's not the color I want, it doesn't feel right, and go back and change it. So it's maybe, but there must be more. Like I look at this one up on the wall, and to me it's inspired. Like it's, I don't think you could consciously have a picture of that in your mind and map that out and say, okay, this is what I want to do. It's all of that process. It just comes out. And the end result, you just know. I have another friend who's an artist, and the question I asked her once is, or that she seemed troubled by, was when is the painting finished? When do you stop? When is that end point? And she said that was always a problem for her. The You're nodding your head. They can't see that, absolutely. But you're in agreement.
We talk about it because what I do, being a student now, is that I post my pictures of my paintings on Facebook at various stages of them being made. Mm-hmm. And often I see that I could have left it at the one step before, but because I feel that I need to bring that work into it, you always feel that you want to make the mark more exciting, more bring depth into your painting, so it happens that you won't mess it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, one little extra step is not that bad sometimes. Other times it's disastrous. So I just kind of gesso the whole thing and start again.
Yeah, so some creations may be failures. And just, okay, boom, I didn't realize what I wanted. And that would be, it would be crazy to think that every act of creation would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I should, just a little background here. Isabel is now currently studying her Bachelor of Fine Arts on top of a few other degrees. You already have a degree in history, I believe.
Yeah.
Your specialty in history, what was it again? Dave told me some of it yesterday.
The conscription crisis.
The conscription crisis during World War I in Quebec in particular.
Yeah.
Yes.
I forgot most of it.
Well, that's fine. I'm not about to ask you to put too much into it.
I know the major details, but I don't... if you asked me what was the name of this commandant,
yes.
I wouldn't
want to do that. I'm far more interested in art. I do appreciate art. Unlike your Philistine husband here, who has no appreciation for art whatsoever, it appears.
Yes.
Oh, he's challenging that.
But Dave is
very supportive of me.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what's important. He's supportive of the artist. But he must.
He didn't understand, like, at first, but when we were talking about art, he asked me, you know, how do you know what's good art and what's bad art? And, you know,
he asked you that?
Yeah. And I said, well, what I do is more abstract and interpretive, and I prefer to bring life to a painting through my own kind of dealing with it, instead of trying to represent stroke by stroke, little brush mark, the reality of what I'm seeing. Because, I mean, I know in my class we have the two types of painters. My type, who's more instinctive, and these other people who are very technically minded, and they want to create, like, Van Eyck paintings with every little tiny hair on a person's head, you know?
But aren't those amazing?
And
they can do it.
They think that that's the only high art, and I disagree.
Mm. What do you think of Alex Colville, his style of high realism, this sort of model? Looks like a photograph, but it's a very, very piece of still life. Very Canadian.
I never saw this.
Colville, one of my absolute favorites. Just died last year. Started off in World War II.
Well, I admire it, just like I admire my friend's paintings.
His famous one is the horse.
I was seven!
His famous one is the horse running down the tracks and the steam engine coming towards
it. Oh, yeah, see that.
That's one of his classics, but that's not representative.
Mm.
He loved his wife dearly, and his wife is almost in every painting that he's done. And they're raw.
Mm.
And one of the last ones he did before he died, I took my students to see it, is just sitting in a room, and you could see death is oncoming. It's very quiet. His wife is at the piano, and he's just looking at the camera. The dog is sleeping, and it's clearly the end of his life. So what I'm saying is he's technically very, very good. It's very accurate, like a photograph, but...
He's
got a vision, too.
I admire it, but I cannot do that. It's not me.
Well, tell me about, on the wall, I'm looking at another painting that I really like, and it looks like three dogs, and pardon me if they're not dogs, maybe they're something else. And I'm thinking, what I'm seeing, it's a beach scene. I see a house in the bottom corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel seaside. I feel it's by the water somewhere. Maybe that's not. three kind of layers of color, like a sky, obviously, some land, and I guess I interpret the other for sea. But tell me about that. How did that come about? Did you know you wanted to paint a dog, and then it became three dogs, or what? How did that come about?
Well, we had... I was in a course called Visual Fundamentals, and he asked us, our professor, Tom O'Flanagan, asked us to create tiles of different colors. We were studying color.
Okay.
And I had gone a few months before to Quebec City to see the Cluny exhibit. It's like tapestry, medieval tapestry.
Okay.
And in the book that I'd bought, I'd seen this little copper dog that looked like that. And it was running and almost looked like a rabbit. It's called a fibule, and people wore it on their clothes. And
this was on a tapestry. You saw this first image.
This wasn't on a tapestry. It was in the book. I never saw the actual copper piece. This is like a little copper piece, maybe this big. And I knew that my professor loved his dog so much that he went for walks every day, and it was part of his life. And I thought, well, I'll mix the both. You know, I really love dogs. That little fibule is great. Uh-huh. So I started putting that dog into almost all of my work, and then this was the end piece of that course. And what I did was I took a little Dremel tool and I did one in the corner, the top one, and I carved it out of the wood with a little Dremel tool. And then I made grooves all over the painting, and then I thought, he's alone, he looks alone, and I made a little house at the bottom. Then I thought, okay, well, I'll do kind of a heraldic flag kind of thing. I'll put three, just like, you know, the coat of arms of whatever, they put lions. And so those are called, it's called, the piece is called The Heraldic Flying Dogs.
Oh, what a wonderful title. I love that.
Just made Tom laugh so much.
Well, it's a wonderful title.
Yeah.
But what I love, I'm looking closely now, and it's so textured. You seem to really like texture.
I love texture.
And it brings the stuff, because it's almost three-dimensional the way you've got it. We're not looking at a flat canvas here. We're looking at the way the house is, the roof in particular. So you actually carved into the wood.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's another very, very special one. So I'm having this conversation with Isabel because I really do believe she is an artist. That it's quite amazing. She's still in the process of studying and doing projects. But I think you will be an artist for the rest of your life. I think this is your destiny. This is your what you are going to do with your life. And it's going to give you great joy and happiness. And I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
I really do. Any closing comments about art? Anything else that I haven't asked?
Yeah, I wanted to say that you're asking me how do I describe my painting? And I was starting to say something, and that's when you say, can I record this?
Uh-huh.
So I was going to tell you that painters don't describe their painting the same way that other people, critics or art historians or amateurs, see the art. Painters describe their art as, yeah, I did that, it was good, but then I got into more acrylic, and, you know, we describe our painting in really simple, down-to-earth terms that people don't want to hear. They want to hear us say, well, I was really reaching for, you know, if you see this, don't start analyzing me, because I just told you. No, but not you, but I mean, when one sees this, they shouldn't start thinking, well, Isabel obviously is troubled by the domesticity of life, because the dog is a symbol of domesticity.
Oh, we are on to something there. See, I was thinking it was your French Canadian roots. For some reason, I'm connecting it with the fleur de lis, and I'm connecting those three things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I see, to me, there's and when you say heraldic, of course, that's
the
French element.
The blue.
Yes.
Oh, well,
yes,
see? Well, that's okay, because then people can start making their own kind of interpretation, and then the piece doesn't belong to me anymore. But I am telling you, this is what I did, and I was worried about the color and other things that people wouldn't want to know about.
Well, I think that's the thing, though, right? As the artist, you're involved with the whole process of creation, the act of doing and so on. The viewer of the art only sees the end result, and that's what they want to do. So there's two different views, and the artist is never going to see the end product, the painting, the same way a viewer who comes at it cold does.
Absolutely,
right? You know what went into it. So that's been kind of fun. It just bothers me that I'm going to have to move that rubber tree plant to take a picture of it, but because I couldn't release this podcast without a photo to go with it. Now we have the sounds of the plant.
Me with making grooves on my phone.
I would have lifted that. I'm sorry. I don't think Dave will appreciate the cost of this podcast. But I think I'm going to use this little clip for the Canadian National Day of Podcasting, because I wasn't going to do one, and I said, this is just a lovely little clip, and it's been a pleasure. Usually I'm interrupting you, and so it's nice to give you a little bit of a chance to speak out. And I think listeners will appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Closing words?
No, that's it.
Yeah, thank you in French, maybe? Just a little
Merci
bit.
Merci beaucoup.
Okay. I love it. I love being in French. Thank you. Merci. Give some people some peace. But I just want to touch on the background. Dave is sitting at the dining table uploading podcasts for this Canadian National Day of Podcasting. Isabel is in the room playing the ukulele. Maddie is probably still sleeping in bed, who knows? Could be studying. She's in her father's course. She has a paper due. And Jonathan was just sitting at his computer here watching My Little Pony, and I think he's moved on to something else. But since it is the Canadian National Day of Podcasting, I feel sort of obliged to add something. This is not my official entry into the Canadian National Day of Podcasting. This is just an acknowledgement to say this is the day. I recorded an episode earlier that I will try and put up today before when I get home, of talking to Isabel about art. I was kind of pleased with that, so that will count. But it's Sunday. It is December 1st, which is the Canadian National Day of Podcasting. Apparently there is no royal in there. And I'll be flying back this afternoon. I've had an absolutely wonderful stay here with the Michaud Broadbeck family. Dave... Amongst other things, Dave is an excellent cook. Really, I'm serious, like really, really good food. And he seems to love doing it. A man of many talents, it would appear.
It's hard to say that because he already knows it. But truly, it's terrific. This whole stay here, and it's just been nice. And it's kind of nice, like today, when you're comfortable with people, you don't have to constantly be. They don't have to be entertaining me. We don't have to necessarily be interacting. Everybody's doing their own thing. Dave and I, of course, stayed up late both nights. Dave, I guess, went through several Fresca and gin rye. I don't know what else he was into. I had my beer. And we talked and argued and went on. And we didn't record anything last time. It was kind of fun. It was just a conversation. Isabel knew enough to probably leave us around midnight or so. We carried on till 2. And that was a lot of fun. Jonathan, here before me, has just put out already his Canadian National Day of Podcasting entry. One of the many from this household. And it's just been special. It's been really nice, just for the company, the conversations, the fun, and the feeling of comfort of just being with close friends that you care about. First time ever, probably the last time. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Just, you know, Sault Ste. Marie is a long way away. But it was just so nice. They treated me so well. I'm even going home with a painting that Isabel has done. One I commented on. I had first seen it on the internet. And I was very fond of it. I just love the expression in the face that somehow she captured. And she has insisted I take it back with me, so I will. And I guess that's it. We're probably going to go out for lunch a little bit later and then off to the airport. And I will have my return flight on Porter. Get home and do what has to be done to get back in. But what a great little escape this has been up in the Sioux. I guess that's all. Not very much. Just a little bit of an update. Checking in. And just to let you know that seeing the highlight, of course, was seeing Dave's university and sitting in his office. And it's so funny being on the other end. This is a friend of mine who's a psych prof. I'm not visiting as a student, going to the psych offices. That was kind of neat, getting a tour of Algoma University. Going out to see the movie last night. Wasn't Catching Fire, but Something Fire. I don't even remember what it was. Listen to John's episode on the Jonathan Files, and you'll find out. The Hunger Games, that was it, the second one. And I quite enjoyed it. I gave it a 3.8. John blew us all away. I won't tell you what he gave it. You'll just have to listen to his show. But it was an interesting movie, and I probably have to go now back and see the first one and try and catch up on what that's all about. So that was part of the visit, part of the plan when I rode in. And I'm just glad I was seeing today, seeing Isabel. I'm just so glad that I planned this. Thought, gee, you know, I'd really like to visit these people. Wouldn't that be a nice thing to do? And these are as wonderful as, you know, while I'm going to Disneyland for a week or Florida or going off somewhere else. I went to Sault Ste. Marie. Well, it wasn't really to see the Sioux. It was to see my friends in the Sioux and learn a little bit more, watch their whole family in interaction. There's an awful lot of love in this house, and I commented on, and it made me very happy to see and witness. They are all characters, each and everybody in this household. I was very glad to get to know Maddie a little better, because I didn't really know her or even know if she would be home. And we got to chat. We are now friends on Facebook. I'm very happy about that. It was delightful sitting beside her at the dinner table and engaging in conversation. A bright young lady with a mind of her own, just like her mother and her father, and her younger brother. It's certainly, wow. If you were doing a painting, this is almost a Gary Larson household. If you know who that is, and of course that is the... Yeah, I'll just leave it there. Been great. Been absolutely great, and I'm very grateful for these kind and wonderful people for letting me come to their home and having me here. And we did record 3 podcasts the first night, and they just went steadily downhill. One, I believe, has been released today for the Canadian National Day of Podcasting. and what is that noise? And the other one, the third follow, it was a drunken, rowdy, noisy episode, and I think I shamed myself by singing a little bit too loudly and in a manner which was suitable only for a drunken campfire. But anyway, whether that one comes out or not, either way, you're not missing anything. Okay, gonna shut her down now and catch up with the rest of the day. It ain't over yet. I'll probably podcast to you a little more or send another little clip from the airport while I'm waiting for my flight home with further reflections of this absolutely wonderful weekend in Sault Ste. Marie with my good friends, Isabel, Dave, and family. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Browning them to get the, what they call that, the Maillard reaction, you know, when you brown things.
Okay.
And it just gives more flavor. Because they're now going to cook really slowly in wine and probably, tomato paste. It's almost like a stew, really. And if you do it right, the meat should almost fall off the bone, but not quite.
He's cutting up garlic in a way that I've never seen before. He crushed it first with the flat of the knife.
That's how you do that.
It just makes so much sense.
No, it makes it easy to do the to peel it. That's all.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Dave, I mentioned earlier, really is a chef, and this looks like an amazing thing. And he's making it, you know, appear easy and fun. And
it is fun. Cooking's fun. Making people happy with food is even more fun.
I wish this recorder could pick up the smell, because it's absolutely terrific. The
that's
absolute
nice, thank you.
Smell of the okay. Cooking going on. This is another side of Dave most of you don't get to hear. It's blown me away. I did not know this. I've heard Dave mention he does most of the cooking, but until I saw it and tasted it firsthand.
You're very kind.
That's proof of the pudding, for sure.
You're too nice to me.
Yeah, well, he's inspired me to. Well, come on, I should at least try. Not that hard to do. He's quite right. Just takes a little bit of a time investment. But Dave seems to be doing it with a certain love, and that, I think, is really the element that makes it taste better. I would have a lot of cursing and swearing while I was trying to do it, and I've got to get past that point.
Oh, I didn't experiment or anything when you were here. I did stuff that was pretty easy for me to do, too.
Now, what was the first one? What was the first meal? Well, it was the mussels. They're wonderful, wonderful mussels.
Just the very classic mussels and, steamed in white wine.
They were delicious.
Oh, yeah.
And last night's feed?
Pork tenderloin with a berry kind of compote.
Yeah.
And potato rösti, which is a little potato cake that they make in Switzerland.
Yeah.
It's one of my grandfather's favorite things.
So tasty. I can picture it exactly as I'm sitting here remembering it. And, of course, generous portions of wine to go with the meal.
So
it has been an absolute pleasure. It has been a pleasure. Oh, he's racing downstairs to get something. But seriously, this is something I didn't really know that well about Dave, and I'm totally, totally impressed. And wow, if there ever could be an inspiration for me to at least get off your ass and try something, this would be it. Oh, up he come. That talk of wine suddenly leaking.
And it's in Merlot because it's really...
And it's the sound of the Merlot going in with the ribs.
Short ribs there, and then I'm going to have to scrape the bottom of the pan to get all the good flavor off the bottom of the pan.
You've already added the garlic in there?
Oh, yeah. Garlic's in there.
What else is in there, then? You used olive oil.
Olive oil and butter.
Yeah.
The butter's more for flavor. The olive oil's to increase the smoke point of the oil, of the butter, so it doesn't smoke too much.
Uh-huh. And you first, you covered the short ribs first in what?
Just
a little bit of flour?
Just flour and which I seasoned up a bit.
Uh-huh. What seasoning? What did you add?
Salt, cayenne pepper, MSG.
And MSG?
I put MSG in almost everything. That's where flavor comes from.
So you're not going to have Mark and Andrew over for dinner?
I guess not. I'll do a long trip then.
Okay. He's reaching in for more ingredients.
I thought I had a thing of beef.
Cooking with Dave. This could be another podcast, Dave.
I don't think.
Oh, if you were to actually tell people what you're doing, I would subscribe. I would listen.
You'd listen to anything. Yeah. So you are. You're listening.
No, that's not quite true. But I would like to. This would be a joyous way to learn how to do a little bit more cooking.
Back when I did that Thunderbird 6 show for the university years ago,
mm-hmm.
I did a couple of episodes of cooking. Yeah. Right, a few university students have gotten easily.
That sound you hear in the background is just the sound of cooking meat, I think, on the stove. So you're searing them, and then you're going to put them in the oven.
Yeah, now they're covered in two-thirds of a bottle of Merlot.
My goodness.
And chicken stock, because I don't have any beef stock, because I'm an idiot. And I just want to bring that up to almost a boil.
Yeah.
And then I'll put it in the oven.
And how long?
4 hours, 5 hours.
Really? A low temperature oven?
No, 350.
Really? That long?
Yeah.
You can't, there's no danger of overcooking?
No. You could, and then they do. But the thing is, if you overcook something that has that much connective tissue in it, like a short rib.
Yeah.
All it does is just make the sauce better.
Okay.
But the meat falls off the bone, and I really don't want the meat falling off the bone. I want it all those.
And you want to start off with good. You start off with good ingredients to start with. They like shopping.
Short ribs are cheap things. Like, I mean, it's not like it's. This whole pot of food here is probably $15.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, there's no reason to buy. Because, I mean, it's cheap meat.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're giving it the flavor.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And in fact, the cheap stuff like that tends to have more flavor than anyone. It's just tough as all.
And that long in the oven, it's certainly not going to be
anymore.
Tough.
Yeah, so the cheap stuff has more flavor because it's cheap because it's tough.
Uh-huh.
But the tough stuff has a lot more flavor because it got worthy, but as part of the animal, it worked more.
Okay. Well.
So, it's like,
See, I don't even think on levels like that. When somebody's talking about this is going to be good because the animal worked harder, I don't think many people make that connection.
Why do you think chicken thighs and legs and dark meat taste better than white meat? Chickens don't fly.
Yeah.
They don't use their breast meat for anything except for getting bigger. But their legs, they walk around their legs. Right?
This takes cooking to a whole new level.
I have read a lot of books, and I do watch a lot of cooking shows. Not so much as I used to.
Yeah.
Because most shows on the Food Network now are just variations of competitions.
I think your average person just doesn't think in those terms.
I'm really interested in food.
Yeah. What's one of your top three favorite things to cook or prepare?
To cook? I like making dim sum.
Dim sum?
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I like hamburgers.
Uh-huh.
I love a good hamburger. Like, it's one of my favorite things to
make. Now, barbecuing or frying them in the pan?
Sure, barbecue.
Barbecue.
Yeah. I like doing stuff that I have done Roast, like, you know, proper,
A roast?
Prime rib.
Yeah.
And Yorkshire puddings and such. But yeah. I love cooking, I'm probably best at cooking Chinese things and Indian things.
That involve a lot of work, a lot of time.
Yeah. But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun. And see, now it's bubbling, so I can put the top on, and I put it in the oven.
All right.
In 4.5 hours.
And that's a special pot that you can just stick into the oven.
It's,
yeah.
It's part of it, having good pots and pans. I mean, it's another poor, it's a poor artist that blames his tools or craftsmen, yeah, or whatever. But I'll say that with shitty pots and pans, you have more trouble cooking. And shitty knives.
You've got good knives, I see.
I got good knives. I got some also some lousy ones, but that's a good knife.
Yeah.
This bow I got for Christmas a couple years ago. That's it. Like, it's a Henkel knife from Germany. It's it's probably a... I didn't ask her what it cost, but it's probably a $250 knife.
Whoa.
But it'll last me forever.
Now, you put it in the dishwasher.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't put their knives in the dishwasher.
I'll sharpen it. I'll sharpen it myself. I have a steel, so it doesn't work.
Using whetstone? An old-fashioned knife sharpener.
So, you probably should put it in there, but it's a lot of trouble to not put it in there. It smacks of effort.
Our listeners are relieved the fan has been shut off.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But
I was convincing them that was a sound of the meat cooking, but no, it didn't sound like
well,
it.
Well, now there's nothing on the stove. Yeah. I mean, it's just all in the
it's just back then. Well, that was enjoyable. I'm glad I caught you at it. I just missed the very beginning. It wasn't on record for the first minute, but we jumped right back in there. So that was Cooking with Dave. Not to be confused with all the Walking with Daves that are out there and the other things. So, thank you.